Parents today have never had more options, more choices to give their kid the best start in life. But like so many things in 2026, some of these choices will cost you a pretty penny. Choosing the best food for well-rounded nutrition, the best hobbies and sports so they find the best friends, and of course, the big one, choosing the quote-unquote best school. Once upon a time, this choice was less of a wrench. The default was you went to the local public school, you probably got a decent education alongside kids from a whole range of different backgrounds. But over decades, the gap in resourcing, quality, and student experience between public and private schools has become a chasm. And it's turned what many would consider a basic right to education into a minefield of parental guilt. Education advocate Jane Caro has tackled the question of how we got here in a new book for the Australia Institute, Rich Kid, Poor Kid, The Battle for Public Education. Jane, welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's go back to your schooling days. Where did you go to school?
I went to Frenchs Forest Public School, Chatswood Public School, and Forest High School.
And was that, those are all public schools. Was that a conscious decision for your mum and dad?
In those days, hardly anyone went to private schools. Like, you know, people who had tickets on themselves went to the posh ones. There was a handful of Catholics that went to Catholic schools. There must have been more than a handful, but not that I knew because I wasn't going to school with them. And it just wasn't a conversation topic. You know, almost everyone went to the local school. And what was great about that, and I recently last year, the year before, time flies, had my 50-year school reunion for Forest High. And what was lovely was the, you know, a huge variety of families and backgrounds and people that were going to that school. So everyone in the community was there, from the, you know, people whose parents were CEOs and doctors and whatever else, to people whose parents, well, fathers it was mostly in those days, we're talking the 70s, you know, were possibly the local garbage collector or whatever. We didn't know what anyone's father did and we didn't care. We just kind of were all kids together. And 50 years later, the variety of things that people had done, lived, the places they'd lived, the kinds of lives they'd had was just as varied and just as rich and just as kind of life-affirming. So unfortunately, these are the schools we've largely lost in large cities in Australia these days. Very few actual comprehensive schools that enrol the entire community, regardless of parental background. There's not a lot left. A few in regional towns, they tend to do very well. But, yeah, we've stripped all that away and I think we've lost a lot.
I do want to get into that, what some of the driving forces of that, but I'm really interested to hear about the decisions, the conversations that your parents were having about where to send you to school. Your mum's schooling in England really kind of shaped what she wanted for her kids.
I suppose so, although she only had the conversation before she came to Australia. So when my father was offered a job in sunny Sydney in 1963 in the midst of one of the worst winters England had had, and my parents were living in a village in Yorkshire, so that would have was particularly grim. My mother often talks about it with three small children. Her only qualm about coming, she was really eager to come, partly just to get away from the cold, but her only qualm was, can I send my children to the local public school without thinking about it? I won't go anywhere where I can't send my children to the school down the road, because that indicates to me that there's something wrong with that society. There's a problem. And in those days, in 1963, Australia easily qualified. Most people went to the local school down the road, both primary and high school, and so that was not an issue. And indeed, when we got here, it was not an issue. And when I was at high school, it was not an issue. People didn't talk about school choice or where they were going to send their children. Neoliberalism hadn't hit.
What had shifted by the time you were deciding where to send your own kids to school?
A lot had shifted. Neoliberalism sort of came in and it really, really infected the Australian school sector. I think perhaps it did it for all kinds of reasons that were not related to education. So the first thing that happened was Robert Menzies gave capital funding to private schools for things like science labs and stuff like that, because they were actually behind the public system at that time. And then when Whitlam came in, he increased that to recurrent funding to all schools from the federal government, private and public, because prior to that, public schools had only been funded by the states, and the federal government really had only funded, you know, recurrent, some capital grants. Then there was a bit of recurrent funding to private schools, and then it was all schools got recurrent federal funding. But one that proceeded to happen after that was that every government that followed just about increased the amount of funding they gave to private schools much more than they increased the amount of funding they gave to public schools. There was still this idea that the public schools were really to look to the states for their funding. Now, the problem with that is that the state government has far less money and much more demands on what money it has in terms of service delivery than the federal government. So what we ended up creating, without anyone, I think, really thinking it through, was for a whole lot of reasons that had nothing to do with education. Whitlam, for example, wanted to end the split with the DLP, which had kept Labor out of office for 23 years, and bring the Catholic Labor voters back into the fold, which it did. But so it wasn't about education. It was about making, you know, political decisions for political reasons. But slowly over time, what happened was we ended up with the schools with the highest percentage of the most vulnerable students, the neediest students, who were the most expensive to teach, reliant on the governments with the least amount of money. Mm. And the schools that were had concentrations of much more, privileged children who are much cheaper to teach, ended up relying on the richest arm of government, the federal government, which raises most of the revenue. And therefore we started to get this awful situation where we had rich schools and poor schools, and the rich schools, today have a concentration of kids from the higher income backgrounds, the top two income quartiles, and the poor schools, almost all of which are public schools, now have huge concentrations of the most disadvantaged kids, the children from the lowest two income quartiles. And the funding, both from governments, does not really reflect the degree of difficulty faced by the two different systems, which is one of the reasons, you know, public school parents often get such a shock when they walk into private schools and go, whoa. And I'm not just talking about the very high fee private schools. I'm talking about the so-called low fee. Now, low fee is a relative measure, low compared to what and low to whom, but the so-called low fee schools still have much more resources than the public schools. Indeed, every single public school in Australia, bar a handful in the ACT, is now underfunded according to its school resource standard. Its school resource standard is simply the amount of money it needs to do its job adequately, not brilliantly, adequately. They don't have enough to do that. Every private school in Australia, bar a handful in the Northern Territory, is overfunded according to its school resource standard. And this has happened incrementally over about, well, more than 50 years, but it was turbocharged in 2000 when John Howard basically deregulated the whole thing and allowed schools to be set up in anywhere they wanted to set up and get public funding. And then what happened was we began to cannibalise. The schools began to cannibalise one another, and we ended up with every area having the highly desirable school, the next one, the next one, and the next one, and the one that nobody would touch with a 10-foot barge pole, which is the one that ends up with all the kids that schools with choices won't touch. Because what this choice, neoliberal choice mantra has done is not give parents more choice. You only have choice if you have either a superstar kid that every school wants or money. That's how you get choice in Australia. Otherwise, schools have choice. Some schools can decide which kids they will and won't educate. Most of those are private schools, but not all of them. Desirable public schools can also decide which kids they will and won't educate. And that is the core of our problem, which is that we now have one of the most segregated schooling systems by social class in the OECD.
You're listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor talking to education advocate Jane Caro, who's fired up and she's got a new book out, Rich Kid, Poor Kid, The Battle for Public Education. She's walking me through the drivers of what's brought us to here. Jane, we don't like to think of ourselves as being segregated in a country like Australia that prides ourselves on egalitarianism. Can you unpack that a little bit more for me?
Sure. We have now really high concentrations of disadvantaged kids in disadvantaged schools and advantaged kids in advantaged schools. And what's worse is that segregation, which is already one of the highest in the OECD, is increasing at the second fastest rate. So it's getting much worse. Other countries are trying to stop that segregation. We tend to pretend it doesn't exist. But it does exist. It's stark. And what is happening is that nothing and no one is benefiting out of it. Results across the board have not improved. Our results since 2000 have basically gone downhill at every level. Worse than that, it has created what is now, according to recent research by the Australian Institute, is the most expensive schooling system in the OECD to parents. Australian parents pay four times as much for school education as the OECD average, and this is entirely due to the preponderance of private schools and the percentage of children in Australia they enrol. Very, very unusual. We lead the world in that. And the fact that those same schools charge unregulated fees, which go up above the rate of inflation every year.
What do we do about it?
Yeah, exactly. Because it's become very entrenched, and we now have, unfortunately, a belief in the community that private equals good and public equals bad. And indeed, we stigmatise often parents and families who send their children to public schools. I've heard public schools being used sort of casually as a joke, as an awful warning. You know, if you don't, I tell my year nine kid, if he doesn't pull his bootstraps up, I'll send him to the local name withheld high school. Whenever I hear that, I'll just warn everyone. I say, please don't do that. That is so disrespectful to the people who attend that school and the dedicated staff who work in it. It's a terrible, terrible thing to do. But I hear it quite a lot. And this is a belief that people now have, that they have to practically bankrupt themselves to buy their kids a decent education. So we need to get over that view. There is, in fact, no evidence of that. Every time results are compared between kids from private schools and kids from public schools, once you adjust for socioeconomic background of students, there is no difference between those results. Now, this is really interesting because when you look at how we have created two parallel systems, one, the private system with all the right to open schools wherever they want, to close schools when they don't want to have them anymore, to pick and choose which kids they will educate and to charge whatever fees they want to, and another with all the responsibilities, have to keep schools open, available to every child, even when it's uneconomic, have to enrol whoever turns up on the door who's living in their catchment area, you know, can only operate on the fees that the governments can provide, continually cash-strapped state governments predominantly. When you see those two situations, staff shortages often, particularly in disadvantaged schools, because we now publicly fund advantaged schools to poach the teachers from the schools and classrooms who desperately need them, because they can pay their teachers more, they pay their principals much more. So we have this terrible situation where it's becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy. So we need to start making things clear. We now have a situation where over half the private schools in Australia get as much public money as the similar public school down the road. And that's all the public school gets, but the private school gets as much public money as the similar public school, but it also gets parents' fees on top of that. So I think we need to start asking for some reciprocal obligations from private schools in return for the public funding they receive. Why should we have one system with all the responsibilities and another system with all the rights, both publicly funded? So I think we need to start saying things like, if you receive public funding, you have to take some responsibility for the compulsory education of all children, including poorer children, disadvantaged children. If you receive public funding, perhaps you can't charge fees above a certain amount. So, for example, if the fees you charge are already higher than what it costs to educate a kid in a public school, and remember, the kids that are educated in public schools are more expensive to teach than the ones in private schools because they're generally more often disadvantaged, then why should you be getting more public money on top of that fee, or your fee has to be held at a certain level? If you want to put it up higher, you lose public funding in return for doing that. All those things could be done. There's a suggestion out there by Chris Bonner and Tom Greenwell that the federal government offer every private school full funding in return for no fees being charged, so that private schools would only get public funding in the same way as public schools do. So
isn't that just a public school?
Well, sort of. There'd have to be negotiations about, they could keep this special character. So they could be religious, for example, whereas a public school can't be. Public schools have to be secular because public schools have to enrol every single child who turns up. And there's obvious reasons why, if you're not secular, if you're promoting one religion over another, then that makes you less welcoming to kids who come from families who don't follow that particular religious tradition. So if, for example, the Catholic system was given full funding by the federal government, the same as the public school, they could still remain a Catholic school with the way their special religious character. So that's the idea.
So, Jane, there's quite a lot of suggestions in your book about this. We don't have time to go into all of them,
no.
But what do you think is the political appetite for shaking things up like you're suggesting?
I think the political appetite is lacking. The Albanese government has done something in that it has promised full funding, according to SRS, mind you, 2026's SRS, to public schools, but not until 2034, which is when today's kindergartners in public schools will be in year eight. So that's not exactly what you might call the most amazing commitment, but nevertheless, they have at least done something. But the appetite to look at the terrible unfairness, the absolute bias, which is benefiting our most fortunate children and really burdening our least fortunate, is very shaky. And this is because of the belief that parents have that private education is a right, and that if they can afford it, they should have it, and that they should be supported in having it. I hear all the time, why should my child not get public funding just because they go to a private school? Well, the point is that every child does get public funding in terms of a fully funded place in their local public school. And that's wonderful. That right remains, whether the child chooses the private, or child's parents, no child chooses a school really, whether the child's parents choose the public school or not, the right for the child remains. And if they don't like their private school, the private school doesn't like them, or the parent can't afford to send their child to the private school anymore, they can still return to the public school and to their publicly funded place. The same does not operate in reverse. No child has a right to a place in a private school. They only have a right to a place in a public school. That's the way most of the rest of the world funds schooling. If you want to go to a private school and buy yourself what you see as an advantage over other children, then you should pay for it. It's really awful to think that the poorest families, most of whom still pay taxes, are actually supporting through their taxes, parents who want to keep their children as far away from the kids in the poorer families as they possibly can. That's the bedrock and unfairness of the system that we currently have, but it makes it very difficult. We also have very powerful lobby groups, very well-funded lobby groups, this won't surprise you, in support of private education. We don't have well-funded lobby groups in support of public education. You can't even give a charitable donation to a public school, whereas you can to a private school, no matter how luxuriously resourced it is. So the whole thing is stacked. And so you can see why parents have made the decisions that they've made. But that's terrifying, because not only is it so expensive for Australian parents, four times the OECD average, but now private school fees are in the top five reasons for bankruptcy in this country. So we have to do something, whether politicians have the appetite for it or not. The model we have now is unsustainable. There are forecasts that in 2036, some private schools may be charging $100,000 a year. This is on top of very generous public funding. So I think there are options that governments could look at. Probably the most palatable would be to say, we will cap the fees that can be charged in return for public funding. That would be something I think that the public might quite like.
These are things that will take a long time to change if they do change. Today, what do you say to a parent who's feeling damned if they do, damned if they don't, with the options that are available to them?
Well, the only thing to do is disregard what other people say. Go in and have a look for yourself. Talk to the principals. Talk to people who already send their kids to that school. You'll get a much more realistic view. And make your own decision. But the other thing to think about is this. If you think about how much money the private schools are getting from both private sources and public sources compared to how little the public schools are getting, and yet there's virtually no difference in the academic results once you correct for socio or you balance for socioeconomic status of the different cohorts that they educate, what are the private schools doing exactly? Why aren't their results way, way better than the public school results? What that must mean is those teachers in those public schools are doing a bloody good job, and those schools are punching way above their weight. And indeed, very popular public schools do tend to be in middle class areas where people have worked that out. But the same is true all the way through Australia. The difference in marks is not there. So frankly, there are many good, valid reasons to look very hard at your public school before you make a decision to spend money you may ill be able to afford. And frankly, when you look at what comes out the other end, honestly, I could compare my kids with the kids they went to public primary school with, who all went off to, you know, posh private schools, and my kids went to a public school. I could compare them very favourably. You really can't pick the difference.
Jane, thank you so much for joining me. We'll have to tackle the problem of tertiary education in another chat. Jane Caro is an award-winning columnist, author, and social commentator. Her essay, Rich Kid, Poor Kid, The Battle for Public Education, is out tomorrow, May 5th.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.